Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Epochs! Hello and welcome to this episode of Epochs, where I am joined by one Mr. David English. How are you, sir?
I'm very good, thank you. How are you?
I'm fine, yeah. Thanks good. For coming in.
Yes.
And today we're going to talk about the Siege of Malta, or the Great Siege of Malta,
yes.
1565.
Yes.
So cool, great. The headline is then, Christians versus Muslims.
Yeah.
That's sort of the thing, isn't it? So the Knights Hospitaller.
Yes.
Largely, but not entirely. Versus Ottoman Turks, Janissaries, Ottoman pirates.
It wasn't just any Ottoman Turks, though, was it? It was the newly conquering of Constantinople Ottoman Turks, who everybody in Europe thought were basically unstoppable.
Right. They were at a high watermark,
yeah,
weren't they,
you could
say, at that point.
And what we're talking about is essentially the equivalent of Tenerife beating the American military. It's basically what it is. So it was a huge symbolic victory because nobody thought Constantinople was the everlasting city. Nobody thought its walls could be breached.
Right.
Until they turned up, Suleiman turned up with these ginormous cannons and just pounded them till they broke. And after that, it was like it sent Europe into a bit of a panic. And the Ottomans had been trying to kind of stranglehold all the way through the Med. You know, to paraphrase where this is, like to set this up where it's coming from, in the year or so previously, and although Rhodes eventually fell, Villiers did hand the Ottomans their backside at Rhodes with like ridiculous, I think it was something like 60,000 men and 200 ships. And they basically sent them home packing from Rhodes. So they'd been dense, but eventually just the sheer force and scale that the Ottomans could supply was kind of devouring everything before them. And Europe, what makes it even more impressive is that because of the Protestantism, so Protestantism led to like a nationalism within Europe where they began to draw away from the collective cause of the Holy Roman Empire, began to focus on national issues. So there was only a handful of nations involved. You know, the Germans weren't there, the English weren't there, because we'd chose to focus on issues close to home. So there was only really a handful of nations who could supply men, and as a result, it was tiny. There was a tiny amount of men.
At Malta in 1565, right, yeah. A couple of things to say there. One quick correction. It was that Suleiman the Magnificent, what we're talking about, isn't it?
Yeah.
But when Constantinople fell, that was Mehmed II. But nonetheless, right, history fans, if you say, and I don't blame them, if you say anything that's factually wrong, they'll tip their fedora. I don't blame them whatsoever. So because Constantinople fell in 1453, and we're now like a good, 100 years, more 100 plus years later. And you could say, some people have said, that at this point in the mid second half of the 16th century is kind of one of the high watermarks, you could certainly say, for the Ottoman Turk. And so if you look at a map, and I'll put maps up in post as I always do, you can see where they've got Turkey, obviously modern Turkey, big chunks or most of the Balkans and Greece, the whole of the Fertile Crescent, the Levant, Egypt, North Africa, the whole lot. And when you see there, those islands in the Eastern Med, so like Rhodes, Cyprus, Malta, they're going to really want those if they're going to push on, take Sicily, Italy, and who knows what after that. And so they, Suleiman the Magnificent, when he's younger man in like what, the 1520s, he takes Rhodes, right? And so at that point in the 1520s, Rhodes is the base of the Knights of St. John or the Knights Hospitaller. And they go back centuries before that, though, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, this all kind of ties into the chivalric crusades, what emerged and everything that emerged out of there with the Templars, Orders of St. John. And yeah, they held out at Rhodes quite remarkably under odds, but eventually succumbed just to the mass horde, which is really the only way you can describe it. It was like horde. It was like a smaller version of Genghis Khan. You know, they just devoured everything that was in front of them. What was it? One of them quoted in the battle, it's either you either fight for destruction like the Muslims or you fight for glory. And it was, they just destroyed everything that was in front of them. So it was impressive that actually, number one, that Rhodes held out for as long as it did, but then a lot of the veterans that left Rhodes were present in Malta, which I think is the reason why Malta held.
So we've got the Order of St. John and the Knights Hospitaller set up in, what would it be, the 12th century, I suppose. But anyway, hundreds of years before this, and they'd been booted out of the Holy Land, or Jerusalem. They were originally an order from Jerusalem, right? They've been booted out in the age of, the Third Crusade, in the age of Saladin, and moved to Rhodes, and were there for a few centuries. And then, as we say, they were beaten, eventually put up a great defence, a great fight on Rhodes, but were eventually swept out of Rhodes, but not killed to a man, right? So their remnant was allowed to go to Malta. Now, I've never been to Malta. Have you ever been?
No, I haven't.
No, I'd love to go. I'd love to go. It's very, very southern, isn't it? It's one of the most southern islands, again, you'll see on a map. And it's very small little island.
Basically, it's heavily fortified.
A rock in the sea, isn't it? Yeah, much more than a rock in the sea. And at that point, it belonged to, what, the King of Spain. And so Philip II, and he says, you can have Malta. I'll let you guys, what's left of you, have your headquarters on Malta. But I heard some people say, what do you think about this? That it's a bit of a poison chalice. It's not necessarily like a supremely kind gift, because Malta was, I've heard it described as like a barren, defenseless rock. And you're right in the middle, even though there's the sea, the Mediterranean Sea, you're right in the middle of Ottoman controlled a sphere of influence. You're right in the heart of it. It's a bit of a poison chalice, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, the way to think of things like the hospitallers is that they're essentially, imagine the SAS gets broken away from the British Army, but still retains the SAS with all of its functionality and training, highest trained special forces in the world, but they suddenly are granted the ability to serve no nation. So I believe that the Pope granted them sovereignty only to the Pope, and that they owed nothing to any king or any nation.
Right.
So they could effectively act with impunity. Now, they were pretty decent. They were fairly moral. But you are talking about a crack squad of probably the highest trained knights in Europe at the time. So as a, you know, yes, if you want anybody there to defend that rock, you want them there, but you'd rather they were there than in your country.
Because they're
going to be keeping an eye on you as well.
Yeah.
Because they fight for Christ and for Christ alone. So yeah, it was a poisoned chalice, really. But if anybody was going to walk out of that, it was them.
And it is, I think it is fair to say, it's just a remnant at that point. What are we talking, 600, 700, 800 knights?
700, I believe, is the normal agreed upon count.
So one thing, to face 700 knights would be a terrifying experience. But on the other end of the scale, it's not much. If someone turns up with 50,000 men...
It's not. And I think people have to have like an understanding of how highly trained they were. So you have that issue with Richard had 1,000 heavy armed knights, took on 10,000 of Saladin's men and routed them. This is how good and highly trained they were. But still, that was a 10-1. What we had in terms of knights, actual knights, not peasants and farmers and hands, actual knights against trained soldiers, the odds at Malta were just, it was insane. There was no way they should have walked out of it, basically.
Right. Yeah. You would think it would be like an Alamo, last stand,
yeah,
every man's going to die, like Stalingrad. This is a gravesite, nothing more. The best you can do is make a good showing of it. You can't win. Well, hopefully we shall describe the story people will see what happens. Okay, so this remnant of the Hospitallers are now on Malta. And in fact, I think Philip II asked for one Maltese falcon a year as payment for it. So it's a bit like, you know, I think sometimes when a corporation fails and they sell the whole corporation for $1, you know, when you see that happen, sometimes it's a bit like that. So, okay, you mentioned Villiers. It's Jean Villiers, isn't it? Jean de Villiers. Yeah, Jean de Villiers. De Villette. De Valette? Jean de Valette.
The French just get close.
Yeah. So he's their leader, the Grand Master.
Yes.
And he had an interesting life, though, didn't he? Because as a younger man, he had all sorts of adventures before this happened.
Yes.
He had been captured. He'd been used as a galley slave by the Ottoman.
Yeah, so he'd fought against the Ottomans a lot, but he's also been enslaved.
Mm.
And it was written that it basically just reinforced his Christian zeal, which is essentially one of the things that got them through. I mean, this guy was 70 when this happened.
Right.
He was 70 years old.
Yeah.
Right, and he was still there day in, day out, on the rampart. So this is building up. They know the Ottomans are coming. They have short work to make long work of the defences, or short time to make long work of what they did have, because it wasn't adequately prepared.
Yeah.
So the island was very easy to attack, and they had to use a lot of things that they learned in, and this is where, is it Valletta? He ended up calling the city Valletta, didn't he? This is where Villiers used his knowledge together with the chief engineers from the experience of fighting the Ottomans to try and fortify the city further with tunnels, etc. And this is what was going on in the build-up. They were trying to fortify the city because they knew it was coming. It must have been like waiting for impending doom.
Mm. Yeah. Like I think of the marine garrison on Wake Island, knowing the Japanese Imperial Navy is coming.
Yeah.
You know you're going to die.
Yeah.
Every single one of you going to die. Or at the Alamo. Everyone's going to die here, basically.
And I think this is how the Ottomans had succeeded as much as they did, was because every single person in that squad, in those ranks, were prepared to die for their cause. Every single one was ready to die for that cause. And we only had that really in these specialist knight formations.
Mm.
So it was a tough call. And they knew that it was, you either stand your ground or you die. And they were prepared every day to die.
If Suleiman the Magnificent decides he wants to really push this, there's nothing you can do about it. Well, no spoilers just yet, but maybe people are already getting the impression, if they don't know how it ends, that it's a glorious stand. So it's interesting then you say that they knew it was coming. So where Jean de Valette was sort of the Grand Master, he actually had, as I understand it, what today we would call a spy network. And he had known a few months in advance that Suleiman is going to make a big effort. I mean, a big effort to take Malta. So like a massive Ottoman navy, tens of thousands of guys, more than one of his senior commanders, going to call in some of the Muslim pirates from the Mediterranean. Just a big effort to storm and take Malta once and for all, because where he pushed them out of Rhodes as a young man, you can only imagine, or we know, that in Suleiman's mind, one of the things he wanted to do was to entirely annihilate the Hospitallers' for good, forever. And that history will chalk that up to him as being responsible for it. So there's not really a giant secret, or rather the Hospitaller's intelligence network got wind that this was coming. And so they've got a bit of time, like not that long, a few months, grace, to do what they can to fortify the island. And so that's what they do, right?
Yeah, and in a few months, I mean, you might think it's a long time, but you're talking about an age where there wasn't really the technology that we have now. Yeah. There's only a few thousand men.
To build a castle or a fort from scratch, you need more than 3 months.
Internal networks, under the ground.
Yeah,
like this was from the very beginning, it was all like an absolute triumph of human spirit, because they must have broke themselves to get this ready. And then they had to fight. You know, it wasn't like they could just prepare for 3 months and train and take it easy and get ready. They were literally grafting day and night, and then they had to fight.
So quick word then on the numbers. Like most things that are sort of pre-modern, there'll be a little bit of discrepancy between accounts of exactly how many there are. But so on the Christian side, 600-700 odd Hospitaller knights, so, you know, crack troops, something like modern day special forces, something like that, or divinely inspired special forces. But then they also had a few thousand basically Maltese civilians. Those numbers vary, right? Sometimes I've seen 5,000-6,000, sometimes I've seen a bit more, 9,000.
Yeah, I kind of see between 3,000 and 4,000. So right. Nobody's exactly 100%, are they?
But that's the sort of ballpark of numbers we're dealing with. Okay. And Suleiman sends, what, 40, 50, 60,000?
It's between 40 and 60. Again, depending on who's writing the account, doesn't it? So
they're massively outnumbered.
All right, but put it into perspective for people. We've only got 75,000, you know, ready troops in our military. So you're talking something that's almost the size of the entire British Army, all at once turning up. That's how big that army was. And 180 ships, give or take. So this is huge.
Suleiman wasn't mucking about. He really tried. It wasn't a half measure. It was because, no half measure.
Yeah, because there was no failing him in his mind or in the mind of his generals. There was no failing him. There was only success. So in his mind, he's not going into this thinking it's not going to succeed. He's going into this thinking, well, I am the magnificent. I will send everything that I have to squish these, and this should be enough to completely destroy them with fun and glee. And they got a short, sharp shock, really.
So one of the things the Hospitallers do is build some forts sort of amazingly quickly, or in some instances refurbish or add to existing defensive positions. So there's Fort St. Andrew, Fort St. Angelo, Fort St. Michael, and Fort St. Elmo, as well as other positions as well. And once again, I'll put a map up so people can see where the waterways, where the harbours, natural spits of land, and all this sort of thing. But he also ordered on Malta that a little bit of a scorched earth policy, right? So that when the Ottomans do turn up, there won't just be fields of food, and like the wells will be poisoned, or a rotting carcass will have been put down that well weeks or months ago. So it's like a sort of total war from the Hospitaller point of view. It's all or nothing on this thing. Again, no half measures, both sides, no quarter given or expected.
Well, it's like, was it the thing with Cortez when he destroyed the ships?
Right.
It's the same mentality. It's like, you either do or die. Basically, and that's where they were. You've got to have your back against the wall that tight. There's got to be no escape for you to actually come out of that the other end or have a chance of.
So often things like that are done. Cortez and burning his own ships so his men won't dream of running away or escaping. There is no escape. Quite often there's, was it Warwick the Kingmaker in the Wars of the Roses killed his own horse when he turned up to the battle to show his men, look, I'm going nowhere. I think that's been done a fair few times in various different ways.
Which is fine, and again, put it into the context, it's fine if you're a soldier, but they were relying on ordinary men, women, and children as well. So it must have been terrifying for them. And it was a case of everyone cast their lot in together, knowing that this was the last ditch, because the Ottomans wouldn't have spared them either way.
No.
So there had to be, this was it. And everybody, you know, imagine being a 9-year-old boy and this is coming to you and you've got a little sister and your mom and you're like, right, okay.
Yeah. Terrifying.
Yeah.
The absolute best you could dream to hope for is to be sold into slavery at the end of it.
Yeah,
and that probably been... won't get that. You'll probably be killed.
Yes, yeah. So it was like an absolutely terrifying thing. And again, the myth around the Ottomans since Constantinople built up that it was this devouring, unstoppable machine.
Mm.
So, I can only imagine a few instances in history where the odds were stacked so greatly against Thermopylae. Is one, you know.
Yeah, they're outnumbered. I mean, it's sort of fairly easily 10-1. I've seen a lot of people say it's 10-1. You know, some will say it's not that bad, and some will say it's worse than that.
It's not shy off, is it?
Yeah. So on the Ottoman side, they've got a few different commanders in the field, right? They've got Mustafa Pasha, Hassan Pasha, who are sort of some of Suleiman's top men, but he does also bring in that Dragut, the figure of Dragut, right? He's a pirate, essentially. Well, there's another way of describing him than simply a pirate who had been all around the Mediterranean, up and down the Italian coast, raiding. And he was, if anything, right, even more vicious and cutthroat and ruthless than an average Ottoman commander.
Yeah.
He really will. Yeah, he really is like a butcher type. So he's there as well.
Which is saying something, because the Ottomans were brutal and ruthless, full stop. Like, they were horrible, horrible. So if you've got someone who's kind of out-brutalizing the Brutus, then yeah, it's pretty bad, isn't it?
So between them, between the two big Pashas and Dragut, they, all three of these guys think that they're really the preeminent, or should be the sort of preeminent
top dogs
figure,
top G's,
yeah, for on the Ottoman side. So that's not ideal for them, right?
But can you imagine the sense of confidence that they must have had, though?
Mm.
And also the sense of, like, we want to stick it to them, because you didn't only have the historical Rhodes, which really damaged them when they did get their ass handed to them the first time at Rhodes.
Oh, yeah.
That really hurt the Ottoman pride. But then you've also got the fact that the Hospitallers were also committing acts of piracy against the Ottomans, and they just couldn't get them. They couldn't stop them. So there was like a crow in their throat, really. They wanted to destroy the Hospitallers like completely.
Mm-hmm.
This wasn't just an ordinary military conquest. This was personal.
Mm.
It's very, very personal.
I get that feeling.
Yeah.
From Suleiman himself. I do really get that feeling that it stuck in his throat that he hadn't wiped them out the first time on Rhodes, and that it was his job. He would be extremely proud if he could have wiped them out entirely. He would have been very proud of that. And from just a grand strategic point of view, he wants Malta, right? He doesn't want this thing sort of behind him, so to speak, behind his lines, sticking out as, you know, like this sore thumb of Christian, an outpost of Christian indomitable knights deep within his territory. He just can't have that.
That's the other backdrop, is the spiritual ideological battle that was going on. You know, Christianity was a thorn in their side, and they'd essentially wiped out 2/3 of Christian lands already. And I think people don't realize that the Middle East was Christian. It was almost entirely Christian.
Of course.
Yeah. And they completely wiped it out. So they were just on this march of, we have been sent by Allah to kind of to kill the infidels. And here there was this continuous thing that was proving resistance to stopping them getting that dominance over Christian Europe, which was all that was left.
Mm. Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, when you look at sort of the chronology, in the pre-Muhammad centuries, that's the all of it is the Eastern Roman Empire,
yeah.
all the way up to the Tigris and the Euphrates sometimes. That border ebbs and flows, but nonetheless. So all of that is Roman and therefore Christian, certainly after the age of Constantine anyway, or Constantine's successors. So, yeah, the Muslim conquests is just taking giant chunks out of the Christian world. And, of course, after Constantinople falls in 1453, a lot of Christendom, even sort of Western, full Western Europe, not just the Pope, but like places like Britain or France or Spain, they, it's an understatement, but they sort of kick themselves that they didn't do more to prevent that from happening. As you said, the beginning, some people thought the walls of Theodosius will hold up forever against anything. You just can't take the city of Constantinople. Well, obviously that eventually proved to be wrong. But so when Malta or when Rhodes is first taken, again, they sort of don't do enough. This grand you would hope of some sort of grand coalition or some sort of first or second crusade style relief could be put together, and it just wasn't. But then on Malta, we're getting a bit of ahead of ourselves, so we'll go back in time in a minute. But eventually something is put together, isn't it, from the Christian world,
yeah.
around Sicily, the Pope and the King of Spain and the Sicilians are able to get together a type of a relief force. Okay, so straight into the action itself then. So Suleiman sends down his tens of thousands of men, hoping, you would have thought, that it'll be a bit of a pushover.
Well, I've heard reports thinking they expected it to fall within days,
right.
basically.
Right.
And they weren't expecting the spirit of the fight that was brought to them.
Mm.
They were shocked at how tough that every man fought every day with blood and steel. And they just didn't think that we had that in us. Mm. As sort of Christian men, they just were literally knocked back on their feet initially.
Mm.
And frustrated, highly frustrated.
Mm.
But then they were also incredibly hot-headed. So they right. weren't always patient and would just run in, ill-prepared or with the timing not perhaps being quite right. So they didn't help themselves, that they were just full of zeal and didn't really think things through. Against the wise head of de Ville, who'd obviously seen a lot of action himself. So he was like a ridiculously experienced man. They weren't expecting that whatsoever.
Mm. Mm. If you enjoyed that preview, please consider heading over to lotuseaters.com to watch the full unabridged video.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.